Everybody is here who's going to be here, so why don't we call our meeting to order. Ronnie, could you do a roll call for us?
Jim, please. Chairman Beasley?
Here.
Vice Chairman Latchford?
Here.
Commissioner Mason?
Here.
Commissioner Newell?
Here.
Commissioner Silverson?
Okay, so we've got four of the five, so we do have a quorum. Ronnie, do we have anyone registered for a call audience?
I have no one.
Okay, good. So we'll skip that then. Next item on the agenda, I guess, is a staff liaison report.
Yeah, good evening, Chair Beasley, members of the commission. Just briefly this evening or afternoon, early afternoon, I guess. Just wanted to give you a follow-up on our CARES Act monies. The town has applied for those monies and actually received the $5.3 million allocated to it from the state. So those monies, actually, I believe today, they came into our bank account, and actually today we did a wire to our investment firm to invest those monies. Not all of them, but a good chunk. I believe about $4 million wire to invest most of that money until it's needed. We did keep about $1 million in our operating account with the purpose that we are rolling out a business assistance program, which was part of our budget, if you'll recall. And so that that program is moving very quickly, and we've already started to receive some applications, and even in regard to that with several of the Oro Valley small businesses. So anyways, just wanted to bring you up to speed on that. With that, that's really all I have for the staff liaison report.
Anything new, Dave, in terms of sales tax collections? Any direction that you're starting to see, given that we've now gone through July?
Yeah, Commissioner, Chairman Beasley, members of the commission, we all indications that we have at this point are that we continue to overperform our conservative estimates. We have not seen any sort of receding of our collections at this point. I think, you know, knock on wood, we've come through the worst of it, hopefully, but we'll see. I mean, our online collections continue to be strong. Obviously, our hotel or our bed tax collections continue to fare very poorly. Restaurant and liquor tax collections, sales tax collections, those are also not faring all that well, but not horrible either. They're starting to, you know, we're starting to see restaurants come back a little bit. So that's about the best I can say. Wendy may be able to chime in and provide a little more definition to that, but I think really what we're seeing is things are pretty stable right now.
Yeah, I would just mention one more note on building activity. I think I saw the July single-family residential permit numbers. I believe we issued 28 permits for July. So construction sales tax and permitting moving right along as well. Really, just as Dave mentioned, those two hardest hit categories are the bed tax and the restaurant and bar at this point.
That's great. Our next agenda item is the meeting minutes that were distributed for our July 21 meeting. Anybody have any comments or corrections or anything on these?
No.
Do I have a motion to approve these?
Motion.
I will second that.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Dave, I guess you're on.
Yeah, so this next item was requested by Chair Beasley, just an update on the town investments. And I guess I've included in your packet this evening a summarization of the town investments as of June 30th, as provided by our investment firm, PFM. I apologize for the size of the document. Hopefully you can enlarge it on your monitors to read the information included there. It did kind of come across a little bit small, but basically, just want to hit on the high points of the two reports that are attached for you this evening. The town has as of June 30th, has approximately $45 million in custody with PFM. Roughly half of that amount is invested in U.S. treasuries or federal agencies. So these are very, you know, about roughly half are in very, very safe investments. Obviously, U.S. treasuries are the safest investment that you can invest in because the federal government's never defaulted on a loan. About 0.5% is invested in a triple B minus bond. You'll notice that company is actually Boeing. And I'll take a quick side story here. I spoke with our interim chief financial officer, Kevin Arts, before he left, just talking about investments. He said one of the things that he did while he was here was he tried to, he noticed that there were a number of investments. I don't think it was a huge proportion, but a number of investments that were in double B rated bonds, and he provided direction to our investment firm PFM to liquidate those and to place that money reinvested in more safe and secure investment options. And I think that was very sound advice. Given what we've seen with COVID and the disruption in the markets in March, late March, et cetera, I think what you see here in the report is we have very 0.5%. It's $228,000 essentially invested in Boeing. I don't think Boeing's going anywhere. They have been hit hard, obviously, due to the airline industry, the travel industry being hit very hard through the COVID season. So no one's buying planes because no one's flying, et cetera. But I don't think Boeing's going anywhere. I think even though they're rated double B, I think those I think that's a fairly safe investment. I don't think they will default. But with that said, everything else is rated A or better in our investment portfolio. 75% of our portfolio is less than 2 years in maturity. So again, I think the key here is we're keeping things very short, which is a benefit to the town in terms of giving us flexibility with our investments in case there was a further disruption, another round of COVID that hits or whatever. We've got sufficient liquidity to deal with that. Only 5% of our investment portfolio is invested past 3 years, and none is invested past 4 years. So the entire portfolio is relatively short and liquid. With that said, be happy to entertain any questions that you have. Thank you.
You know what the current yield is on that portfolio?
Wendy, I think you were just looking at this and comparing it to LGIP. Do you have that, Wendy?
Uh,
Yes, I believe the most recent yield was about 2.5%, if I recall. That's what I had seen most recently, I think.
2.5% in the entire portfolio?
I believe so. I can do a double check and we can follow up on that, but I believe that's what I had most recently seen on their statements.
The LGIP return.
Less.
Well, you know, 10-year treasuries are 0.6%. So I find it difficult to comprehend that this portfolio is 2.5%. Particularly given the fact that
Mr. Chairman Beasley, members of the commission, I've got the yield to maturity at cost at 2.5%. Yield to maturity at market is 0.65%.
Okay.
So, yeah. So, you know, a lot of these investments were purchased obviously prior to COVID.
Right.
And so, you know, we took advantage of the better rate environment when they were invested. Obviously, if they when they come to maturity and we have to go back and reinvest them, we're going to have to, you know, we're going to take a hit on the on that because to reinvest them, the markets just aren't going to sustain or can't are not where they need to be from, in terms of a yield standpoint to outperform where we were when we bought these investments.
Mr. Chairman, if I could ask a couple of questions when you...
Go ahead, John.
Dave, thanks for the report. The name of the our investment advisors, again, I missed that.
It's PFM.
Are they local? Or?
They have, yes, they have a local office, but they are actually a national investment firm.
They are, okay. Have we had them for a while?
We have, and they are very, very much tied into the I'll say the municipal, the town, city sector. So a number of like I believe City of Tucson uses them, Town of Marana. There's a number of cities and towns, and both locally and even statewide, that utilize PFM. As their investment advisor.
I see.
Very strong firm in terms of understanding Arizona revised statutes, the limitations, et cetera, for compliance with Arizona revised statutes for investing public resources.
I see, okay. I noted, and this is a point of education for me, I know we're going to cover the financial policies as part of them anyway later on in the meeting, but I was a bit confused. Is there a separate investment policy outside of the financial policies? Because what I find in the financial policies is pretty short and direct.
I am not a Vice Chairman Latchford, members of the commission, I am not aware of anything outside of what we see in the financial policies before you this evening. If something does exist, I'm not aware of where it would exist.
the reason I ask is that with third-party advisors, there's oftentimes the requirement to have a contractual obligation of which in investment advisors you have a detailed policy as to what they can, cannot do. I'm sure you've seen it. I believe it was part of your handouts that you had from the fire department. And I was wondering if they have they been operating off of a investment policy that is outside of the financial policies. It seemed like in reading the investment summary that there is, but I don't know. But you say there isn't one, so. I guess that's something we'll talk about later.
If I may, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Vice Chairman, it might be more specified in state law. We'll do some digging on that. There are some very clear requirements that we are required to follow when it comes to our investments, and we don't typically repeat those, obviously, in an investment policy. So we'll dig those and we'll get them to you so that you have a clear understanding as to how big is our lane, because okay. It's not very big.
Right.
I don't think the investment policy references Arizona statutes.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman?
I said, I don't think the investment policy is even referencing Arizona statutes. Probably what it should do if that's how it's linked.
I believe Wendy was going to weigh in.
I was, sorry. Mr. Chair Beasley, Vice Chair Latchford, Dave and Mary, we actually may have a separate policy with PFM. I want to say I've seen such a document before that has more specifics on what they can invest on our behalf. We can do some digging, but I'm having a deja vu moment that maybe we do have such a document in existence.
Well, typically for the size of the account and the sophistication of the advisory firm that you're related, David, I would think that they would demand to have a very specific, wide-ranging investment contract. Now, maybe it's not a policy, it might be a contract.
Right.
So it'd be nice to see what they're operating, because they could see that, based upon the contract, that they're doing what they're supposed to be doing. And we may be sitting here saying, well, we don't like that, or that's not what our agreement is, but I couldn't imagine that they'd take on an account without having something either contractual or in a policy that has been approved and passed by the council. So anyway, it'd be interesting to see what they're operating under.
Yeah, Vice Chairman Latchford, Chairman Beasley, members of the commission, we do have a contract with PFM. It's the policy piece that I think is a little bit weak, in my opinion. I mean, this is part and parcel why we're bringing the policies before you this evening and in future sessions, because I think there is some strengthening that can be done to the policies just to further protect the town and our citizens.
Right.
Are investments covered in the town code, or?
Commissioner Mason, I'm not sure I caught that. Can you repeat the question, please?
Is investments covered at all in the town code, or? I don't remember. I've looked at it, but I can't think of it right now.
That, Commissioner Mason, members of the committee, that's a question for legal, and unfortunately, I don't see any of our legal staff online here. I am not. You know, I haven't been with the town long enough to know what's included in the town code, whether that encompasses investments or not. My guess is it probably doesn't. I think that would be a little bit unusual to place an investment section in the town code, because really the town code really is dealing with really town-specific laws, and investments aren't really subject to that purview.
So, David, one follow-up question, if I could. The reason I started going down the road with our advisors, the information that you forwarded was very useful. Thank you for doing that. I noted that about 15% of our investments are in a category which I wasn't expecting, and that is auto financing. And as you know, auto financing runs the gamut depending upon the auto that you're looking at. And I was wondering how we got there. That's not something I would have expected to have seen, to be honest with you.
Yeah, Vice Commissioner Latchford, Vice Chair Latchford, members of the commission. I had that same question when we had our phone conversation with PFM. And what they said to allay my concerns were that basically these are not in really direct direct auto finance companies. Basically, what happens is these loans get pooled together, similar to mortgages, and they get pooled together into a fund. So really, the risk is diversified and spread out. And there's, you know, from their standpoint, there was not any sort of significant risk to the town of, you know, in terms of if you know, Joe Blow, you know, or, you know, the person who received the loan, if they defaulted on the loan, would that cause cause the town to be in trouble or whatever? There's not really that type of risk because of how it's structured and how it gets pooled. And really, we're investing in the pool. We're not investing in individual loans or individual finance companies. So hopefully that provides a little more.
That's how they're explaining it and everything. That's got me wondering, well, what direction are they getting that says you can go ahead and do that? Or do they have the ability to do it on their own without consultation with the town? And I think you're asking the same question. I mean, you would like to know. You don't want to be the one asking the question. You want them to come and ask you first, may I? And so I was kind of, it's not something you typically see in conservative portfolios. So I think you're asking the right questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair. That concludes my questions.
David, does PFM have some specific benchmark references that they're managing the portfolio against? I didn't see that in the investment policy either.
Yeah, no, I, Mr. Chair, members of the commission, I'm not aware of any. I think, and I don't know what, you know, I know what just, I mean, I've already relayed what our interim chief financial officer provided in terms of direction to PFM. I'm not aware of what the prior chief financial officer provided to PFM. So I really can't tell you. I don't know. Obviously, I'm trying to learn and pick things up as I go. So I'm not aware of any benchmarks per se. I know Kevin wanted to, you know, Kevin Arts wanted to keep things fairly short and to reduce some of the risk in some of the lower, I'll say the lower rated investments that the investment firm was investing in. Which I think he was successful in doing that. But again, you know, I think we're just kind of at that point where, you know, we're I think we used to have a little bit longer exposure in terms of investments. You know, obviously through time or whatever, things mature, et cetera. And so I think the yield that we've seen over the last year, over the last couple of years, it's unlikely that we're going to see that yield anytime soon as we reinvest those monies, as those investments term and come to maturity, and then we have to figure out what to do with those monies and reinvest them. You know, we're going to continue to try to keep things short. That will be my direction to them, just because I think the liquidity piece is really important. I think we heard it through the budget process. Just keeping things very conservative, not necessarily, you know, trying to maximize yield. I'm sure if we went, I mean, even going longer term, I mean, you mentioned it, Chair Beasley, the 10-year Treasury, which I think is what the benchmark is for a lot of different types of investments and even debt instruments. The yield curve is very flat right now. So I don't know that even going out long term, you're necessarily getting properly compensated in terms of additional yield on those investments. So I think we're gonna try to keep things short and hope that the markets at some point turn around. And then when they do, and we get kind of more of a normal type yield curve, we'll take advantage of that situation when it arises.
Don't hold your breath. I think when we get into the discussion on policies, I think this particular area of investment policy, and I agree with John, needs quite a bit of beefing up. quite honestly, when I used to work with public sector as an investment advisor, the typical investment policy would go 6 to 8 pages, not several paragraphs. So
right.
I think we do, this is something that we probably need to address.
Agreed.
Anybody have any other questions on the investments? Thank you. This was helpful. I think it's the first time we've seen what the holdings are and get a little bit of an appreciation of it. And it probably would be very helpful to see what that PFM contract actually calls for. And it may answer a lot of our questions with regard to performance guidelines and all kinds of things. You're still on, sir.
All right. So next item on the agenda is presentation of basics of fund accounting. So I've got a little presentation here. If you'll just bear with me, I'm going to try to share my screen so that we can run through this presentation. Can you all see the presentation on your screen?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, good. So this was an item that was, again, requested in the last Budget Finance Commission meeting. So just a quick presentation. I don't want to take too much time this evening because I want to reserve most of our time, obviously, for the meat of the discussion in terms of going through the financial policies. But fund accounting is an accounting system for recording the resources that have been limited by the donor, grant authority, governing agency, or other individuals. And it really emphasizes accountability rather than profitability. So that'll be kind of the main, you'll hear it again in future slides, but kind of that main theme that you see it both in the nonprofit sector and also in the government sector. Fund accounting is utilized because the motive of either a not-for-profit entity or a government entity is not obviously a profit motive. It's a service-based motive. And so fund accounting really is designed to demonstrate accountability, transparency with what different services cost. And when you're talking about either the donor or the taxpayer, either in the not-for-profit realm or the government realm, typically they're very interested in knowing where their money's going. So fund accounting kind of accomplishes that. What is a fund? So a fund is a self-balancing set of accounts. It includes assets, liabilities, fund balance, revenues, and expenditures. And so all of those, all the debits and all the credits from an accounting standpoint, they all net out to zero. So my third bullet point there, each fund functions similarly to a subsidiary of a parent corporation in the private sector. That's, you know, if you're not really familiar with a government and fund accounting or a nonprofit and fund accounting, to me, that's my best analogy. If you come from the private sector, if you're familiar with a parent corporation and its subsidiaries, each fund really functions similarly to a subsidiary of a parent corporation because it has its own assets, it has its own balance sheet, and it has its own income statement, essentially. So why are funds necessary? And again, just talking about the profit motive, I don't want to repeat myself, but the profit motive versus the service motive, what we're dealing with here is when revenues are restricted, whatever those restrictions are, whether they're internal or external, whether they're law-driven or donor-restricted or whatever, you know, grant funds from the federal government, whatever the restriction is, it really fund accounting shows how those restrictions are being, you know, the restrictions of those funds are being utilized. So you see the revenues coming in, and then you see the expenditures going out, and those expenditures really ought to be directly related to satisfying the restrictions over the monies. And so that's why we set up the funds. I need to point out the GFOA best practice is not to create more funds than are absolutely necessary to demonstrate accountability and transparency, because the more funds you have, the more complexity you add. So if you're adding, you know, funds for every little resource that comes in the door, that's probably just gonna, at some point it just becomes information overload. It doesn't really accomplish the purpose of keeping things transparent, because you have to wade through so many different funds to really understand what's going on in terms of the overall big picture. In terms of governments, every government has a general fund. That's kind of the standard thing, and really there's no requirement that a government has more than a general fund. However, again, the laws, the grants, the things of that nature, I'll point out, like for us, the town, our HERF revenues, where we've got street revenues coming in from the state, they have to be utilized for street expenditures and maintenance. I mean, that we would want to set up a fund for that just to demonstrate, document our accountability, our compliance with Arizona revised statute. So that's why we set up funds. And hopefully we don't set up more funds than are absolutely necessary. I think we'll talk about it later, but like our water fund, we're dealing with a specific water revenue stream that, I guess pun intended, water revenue stream that's coming in. We want to make sure that those water revenues are fully supporting all of our water costs. And so setting up a fund is really helpful in determining that, making sure that our user fees are properly properly charged, properly supported for our cost structure. So again, primary types of funds that you'll see in a government sector, the general fund, which is our primary operating fund. In the general fund, you'll see a number of different departments, a number of administrative departments, and then other types of departments as well, like police, which is public safety, and also parks. And then we have enterprise funds. Enterprise funds are supported by user fees, and they really function similarly to a business. So when I say user, well, really they're consumption fees is the best way to say it. It's a utility. So like a water or stormwater utility, there are utility charges. So the amount of consumption, however much consumption a customer has, that really dictates how large their bill is. And with enterprise funds, they're really different from the other types of funds that you see here, in that they are accounted for under the full accrual method of accounting, because they are running and functioning really similarly to a business. And then we have capital projects funds, which are primarily impact fee funds, but we also, I think, have a capital project fund for our CIP projects, our larger capital projects, which is pretty standard in governments. We have a number of special revenue funds. And really, special revenue funds are not consumption-based fees and charges that you see, but they are they can be a number of different types of revenues. So our street revenues, which is our highway fund, we have a community center fund where there's sales tax, a portion of our sales tax is being dedicated there. So those are called special revenue funds. They really are really restricted or dedicated sources of revenues. Again, either internally or externally. And then we have one internal service fund. And what an internal service fund does is it basically provides services internally to other departments and other funds within the town. And for us, that is our benefit self-insurance fund. So that fund tracks all of the costs of our self-insurance program. So our medical costs, et cetera, because we're self-insured, we pay United Healthcare, and we pay some consultants to do some work in that regard to provide benefits for our employees. And then we charge the cost of that to different funds and different departments to throughout the town. And it, so it really gets, that cost gets allocated and charged fairly across the town and the different funds in the town. So the fund structure, basically this is how our fund structure works. So again, we have governmental funds, which is our general fund, our special revenue fund, capital project funds, debt service funds, and then our proprietary funds, which are enterprise and internal service funds. So so our proprietary funds, again, those are accounted for under the full accrual method of accounting. Our governmental funds are accounted for under the modified accrual method of accounting. And I'll talk about what the difference is in another slide. But basically, you can kind of see the breakout there of the different funds throughout the town. And, you know, again, the reason why these funds are set up is because, generally speaking, they have their own specific revenue source. And we want to show how those revenues are being utilized, how they're being expended throughout the town. So let's talk about the basis of accounting. So I mentioned our governmental funds are accounted for under the modified accrual method of accounting. It's also called the budgetary basis, which is generally accepted accounting principle for governmental funds. And really the focus there is a short-term focus, both in terms of assets and liabilities. So you're seeing current assets and current liabilities accrued, but you're not seeing the long-term assets and the long-term liabilities accrued under the modified accrual basis of accounting. Our enterprise or our proprietary funds are accounted for under the full accrual method, which is accounting generally accepted accounting principle for the proprietary funds. And that takes the full, that long-term focus, long-term assets and long-term liabilities, and shows that overall long-term picture financially for those funds. So want to talk about some of our revenue sources. So, you know, a key to fiscal stability is having a diverse base of revenue from different sectors so that there's a strong mix of stable recurring revenues to offset those that may be more sensitive to economic fluctuations, and it mitigates our risk of experiencing sharp revenue declines. So so basically, these are the main revenue sources of the town. The state levies a 5.6% sales tax, so we get a portion of that, and that's based upon population. We get some income tax as well. There's a basically a two-year lag, and this is, you know, when you hear state revenue sharing, that's, you know, that this is a portion of that state revenue sharing, the revenues that we receive from the state. Gas tax revenues, cities and towns receive 27.5%. of all gas taxes, and you can read there, half is distributed based upon population, the other half is based upon proportion of gas sales in the county, in our case, Pima County. So you see how that's distributed. We also get some vehicle license tax, about 20% of the revenues for licensing of motor vehicles is distributed to incorporated cities and towns. And then we have a cable franchise fee as well, 5%, which is from Comcast or Xfinity or whatever they're called. And then we also get some user fees. You know, we charge user fees for town facilities and services. You know, park lighting, aquatics, and recreation are listed there. We get some grant revenue, not a whole lot. I think, you know, this year certainly we'll see a significant boost just from the CARES Act that we receive. But typically, when you apply for grants, they're looking for really needy agencies from a financial standpoint, and the town has typically been very responsibly and conservatively managed, so usually we are not as successful in those arenas, but sometimes we are. And we charge some building permit fees, court fines, obviously with our municipal court, development impact fees. Those are our growth-related fees that we charge developers for growth, for to support infrastructure that is necessary due to their projects, increasing water mains and different things like that, built, you know, paving streets or adding streets to the town, et cetera. Those are funded through, typically funded through development impact fees. And then water sales certainly is a revenue source for, you know, we charge our residents for water consumption, and also stormwater as well. What you don't see there on this chart in terms of main revenue sources is a sewer fee, which is another fee, an enterprise fund that you'll typically see in cities and towns. Our town does not have its own sewer utility. We actually contract with Pima County for that service. So when you see your water bill and you see that we're charging you for water and we're charging you for stormwater, and yeah, we're charging you for sewer, we don't keep those sewer monies that we collect. We actually remit those to Pima County. So here, this chart kind of shows some council approved versus voter approved revenues, and the council approved, we have local sales taxes, license and permit fees, charges for services, impact fees, and water charges. We don't have a use tax, and we don't have a commercial rental. We don't have commercial rental taxes. But those would have to be council approved. And then the voter approved, the town doesn't have a property tax. The town doesn't have residential rental taxes, and it doesn't have electric or gas franchise fees. Those would need to be voter approved if we wanted to look at those in the future. Accounting and reporting. So I think I mentioned it before, but our comprehensive annual financial report, which is basically the report card, I'll say, you know, this my best way to explain it. It's basically our report card for the town financially. You know, whereas our budget looks forward, our comprehensive annual financial report looks in the rearview mirror and says, okay, where did we end up after last fiscal year? The financial statements, we're required with the CAFR to present our financial information under both the modified accrual and the full accrual method of accounting. And then there's reconciliations in the CAFR between the balance sheet, which is the modified accrual, to the statement of net position, which is the full accrual. So just different names, but really presenting the same type of information, but really, again, that the short-term perspective versus the long-term perspective is really the difference there in those reconciling items. And then also in the statement of revenues, expenditures, and changes in fund balance, which is the modified accrual, to the statement of activities, which is the full accrual method of accounting. So you really see the reconciliations under both, you know, I'll say the balance sheet and the income statement. That's basically what we're talking about there in terms of, you know, they're called different things, but that's basically what we're talking about between reconciling between the modified accrual and full accrual method and those reconciliations. So fiscal management policies and practices. Again, we're going to kind of talk about these a little bit later in the next item. So I don't want to spend too much time here, but just generally speaking, just kind of highlighted some of the significant policy related and practical items that we need to be aware of. The annual independent audit by a CPA firm, an independent CPA firm, obviously is required by Arizona Revised Statute. You know, the rest of these items are really policy related items that we'll discuss either tonight or in future Budget and Finance Commission meetings. With that, again, I didn't want to take too much time, just kind of a short down and dirty of fund accounting. Any questions that you have in regards to the basics of fund accounting?
I have a quick one, Dave. In terms of the funds, How do they relate to bank accounts?
Yeah, so Chair Beasley, members of the commission, what we do and what you see cities and towns do, so let me take a step back. Historically, what you saw was there were individual bank accounts for every single fund. So if we had 22 funds, we had 22 separate bank accounts. That certainly was not efficient for governments to operate and function that way. So what you see here at the town, and it's, you know, you see it really any type of city, town, municipality, local government that has any sort of sophistication whatsoever, they usually utilize a pooled cash or pooled investment type approach. So really we have our, you know, I'll say our operating account with Wells Fargo, or we have our investment accounts with PFM, or we have some accounts with, we have an account with the state in the pooled cash account or pooled investment account. A local government investment pool, sorry. Basically what happens is that those accounts get reconciled on a monthly basis. And then as there's activity in each fund, those funds will, they have their own separate cash or whatever, but it's allocated in those funds. And so so if revenues, outperform expenditures in any given month, obviously the cash balance will probably increase. And vice versa, if revenues are less than expenditures, then we'll see a draw on cash or investments in that fund. But there's not a separate account established with each fund because it's all pooled. And then there's a reconciliation process that we do. I do it at the end of the year where I'll take all of our operating accounts with Wells Fargo and our investment accounts, et cetera, and show the distribution. And obviously the goal, the intent there is just to demonstrate to our auditors that all of our accounts, all of our cash, as they're reconciled, as we've done a bank reconciliation, et cetera, this is the distribution across all the funds. And it has to reconcile to the penny. It can't be anything different. Otherwise there's something funny that's gone on. That's basically what the process is. We don't maintain individual accounts for each fund. We have a pooled account, and then that pooled account gets distributed across all the funds as necessary.
So this would also include the enterprise funds. All of that is pooled, and you're just doing accounting for those also.
Yes, sir.
In terms of that one chart on council approved versus voter approved revenues, out of curiosity, what determines court fines and fee?
So, Mr. Chair, members of the commission, if I understand the question properly, the court fines and fees, so there is Arizona revised statute that dictates those in terms of what amount gets remitted to the state, what amount gets remitted to Pima County, what amount gets to the count, the town gets to keep internally. So there's Arizona revised statute that dictates those amounts. Am I understanding the question correctly?
Yeah, so the Arizona statute would dictate the amount of the fine or fee and how it is distributed.
I believe so. Feel free to jump in if you know something different than what I'm saying. I don't want to misspeak here, but that's the case.
That is mostly true. There are some that are open to the judge to determine, but in terms of fines and stuff like that. But there are many statutes that have mandatory minimum fines that you have to impose.
I think the town can add add to that fine. Am I correct there?
Yes, they can add to that fine, but then you're out of whack with all the other jurisdictions. And then you're subject to a lawsuit saying, how come you're so much different than everybody else? So we try and keep it fairly close.
Anybody else have any questions for David? It's an old hat, isn't it, Mom?
Yep. That was very helpful. The whole purpose was just to, you know, municipal accounting is different, terminology is different, so it's helpful when you're going through budgets and policies and whatever, that terminology helps understand the why of sometimes why things are done. So that's why I think it's very helpful. So thanks, Dave.
Yeah, and Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, I'll just add one last thing before we move on. An FYI, just something to be aware of. GASB is kind of the authority. So in the private sector, FASB is the authority for generally accepted accounting principle. In the government sector, GASB is the authority for generally accepted accounting principle. And they are in the process of reviewing revenue recognition policies and reporting, et cetera. There is a complete rewrite, whereas modified accrual has always kind of been the standard for governments. And then with GASB 34, I believe back in 2004, if my memory serves correctly, when that was required to be integrated or implemented by governments, we had to add the full accrual method. That's where you saw us adding another method of accounting and reporting on that in the CAFR. GASB is looking at completely rewriting the structure of governmental accounting and what satisfies generally accepted accounting principle for government. So that's a few years off. Unfortunately, I don't think I'm going to be able to make it to retire before then. So I'm going to have to go through that mess. But stay tuned on that. That is a major, major deal. Probably looking at about 3 or 4 years down the road before that gets implemented.
Well, you're lucky if you don't have to deal with it.
So stay retired, Chairman Mason. Commissioner Mason.
I hope I get to retire from it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You're still on.
All right. So let's keep this ball rolling here. So included in your packet this evening, let's get into the meat of it. Chairman and Commissioners, I've included the current town financial policies. Basically, what I'd like to accomplish this evening is to agree on the structure of the policies, of the updated policies, as well as review letter A, which is, it's termed our financial planning policies. Generally speaking, I think the current town financial policies are not particularly well organized and lack sufficient definition to be easily utilized. So due to this, I think as I've reviewed the policies, there appears to be some redundancy in certain policies because it appears it was difficult to place a policy in the right place. And so because we had difficulty, well, it kind of applies to here and it also applies to there. We'll just include it in the same place or in different places, but the same policy, really. So I see some redundancy. Obviously, we talked earlier this evening. I think there are certain places, investments in particular, where there's some strengthening that needs to happen to protect the town sufficiently. But with that said, does anyone have any comments or feedback on the structure of the current town policies? I did include my former employer. Their policies are not perfect, but you do see there is more definition. So that was the reason why I included that. And they're not as diverse in terms of revenues or even financially as the town is, but you see more definition. They do have some redundancy if you read. I was reviewing their debt policy, and I'm not. Sh- oh, I Thank you, Town Manager Jacobs. I guess I need to unshare my screen. Let me see if I can figure out how to do that. Did that work? Am I now unsharing?
Yes.
Thank you. sorry, a Zoom faux pas there. I think if, you know, from my standpoint, I'd like to see, you know, I guess a little more definition to these policies. What I'm looking at when I review these is I see financial planning policies in about three or four sections, but then a lot of paragraphs that kind of deal and hit on different things. And I think there's, you know, we could clarify and provide more efficiency, more transparency to these policies, more ease of use if we could provide a little bit greater definition to these. So that's just a thought that I have. And then we talked about this, I believe, at the last BFC meeting, where there's no definition. So that might be something that we want to include. Also, I think if you compare our financial policies to the fire districts, they have a purpose and a scope for the policies that really kind of clearly delineates what we're looking at and why these policies exist to begin with. And we're really lacking that type of clarity in the town's financial policy. So those are just some thoughts that I have. I'm very interested in hearing your thoughts as well. Before we get into looking at A, though, I kind of want to hear your thoughts in terms of structure. How you think we best ought to structure these, or do you think the current structure is fine?
Let me make one quick. Okay, go ahead, Dan.
David, thanks for that introduction. And the more I got into this, I can understand that we bit off a lot here to choose. I would just take a step back a little bit and go up one level, maybe, best way to put it. I would like to know whether there's current policies that should be eliminated or greatly incorporated somewhere else, maybe within the town's operating procedures. Are they really policies? I don't know if they are or not. And then the second thing in conjunction with that is I would look at, is there policies we need to add in? I had a couple that came to mind that I haven't seen. They may be elsewhere in the town, but they're not in the financial policies. I picked out four. One would be procurement. I don't know if procurement has a policy elsewhere in the town, but typically you see those kind of things in financial policies. Risk management and internal controls. I didn't see any mention of that in there, and yet we may have them. So please bear with me. I may be speaking out of turn if they're somewhere else. Economic development, and not the economic development from the standpoint of the, I know we have a separate department and function that's headed up by an executive over there, but this would be more of a financial look at economic development. And you mentioned something that I hadn't thought of until you mentioned it in the last presentation, and that's grants. You know, I didn't see anything in there about grants. So step one might be, you know, do we have some that we need to take out, maybe not eliminate, but place elsewhere, and maybe not. I'm just posing that. And then the second point is, are there some that we need to really conscientiously bring into the financial policies? Could be more.
Yeah, Vice Chairman Latchford, members of the commission, I fully agree with those comments and sentiments. That was something that I mentioned at the last BFC meeting, is something that we need to look at is, what do we have currently? I mean, as we look through these policies, are there things that we need to add? Are there things that we need to take out? Are there things that are really not appropriate? And so what I really wanted to try to do as we went through this process, rather than look at everything as a whole and kind of get lost not kind of lose our bearings, but kind of really take more of a structured approach. I think that's why, I really wanted to look at Section A to begin with, I guess, first and foremost. Well, look at the structure, make sure that the structure is appropriate, but then also kind of take a systematic approach of reviewing these policies over time, utilizing future, because there's no way we're going to be able to, to, as you mentioned, there's no way we're going to be able to knock this out in one meeting or even two or three meetings. It's going to take several meetings, several discussions to, and I really wanted to, I guess, take a systematic approach of reviewing it and then have me kind of make those edits and adjustments, hopefully bring those back to you as kind of a review at the next meeting for hopefully the financial planning policies, and then talk about subsection B at the next meeting and kind of move through it in that systematic process so that we can hopefully all stay on the same page as we deal with this process. So.
Yeah, and David, I think the process is laid out very clearly, and that's great. Somehow you got to get through all of them because there's a
right.
lot. And I agree with that. So maybe what we should do is enable you to build a parking lot over here and say, remember that? That's the consultants all like parking lots. And to put the additions that we want to consider, and then another one over here on the other side, the left-hand side, parking lot, the deletions that
sure.
you might consider.
Sure.
You can tackle those at the end, or incorporate them as we go along.
Absolutely.
David, when I first read this Exhibit A, I thought this was a summary of the policies, et cetera, that you had, rather than the policies themselves. I didn't find them particularly detailed. I think that even in terms of the presentations that and the documentation that you have, do you want to have a summary and then have a backup for each one of these things with a detailed policy? Or do you want to have the detailed policies, et cetera, in one huge document?
Yeah,
Mr. Chairman, can I weigh in on that just for a moment? I do want to remind the Budget and Finance Commission that what you're being asked to review and advise is the thing that will go to the council. So think of it in terms of a tier, okay? There's policies, and then there are the procedures and the methodology that would really be at the level of the Chief Financial Officer. What we want you to take a look at and review for the council are, what are those things that don't change? What are those general principles, not the minutia behind it? That is a staff level. You are advising the town council, and what's going to go before them is a policy level document, not down into the weeds. So not to say that there wouldn't be detail behind some of those, but that would be in the form potentially of a departmental policy, departmental procedure, that sort of thing. But the question is, what should that overarching policy be? And then the how, that's the make it so, then our job is to make it so. And so it's, while all of you have all dealt at the minutia level because of your professional experience, I need you to step up and put yourselves in the shoes of the council, because you're appointed to advise them. And so that's, we're bringing to you their policy that the council adopts every year and as part of the budget, and that's what we need you to take a look at. Now, there may need to be some more detail in some of these, as our Chief Financial Officer just mentioned to you. He agrees with you. But let's not get into the how and the procedures and that sort of thing, or frankly, this will take a whole heck of a lot longer than even you're thinking that it's going to at this point.
It kind of reinforces that you want more of a brief policy with more detailed documentation, including how to behind it, which the council doesn't necessarily have to dig into.
That's correct. And the council would, that would be our responsibility to take care of at a staff level. If you have some thoughts on that, that's great. But our, you know, our goal is to get the policy level information that would go in the budget, and then we would then implement that that direction. I will tell you that that transition between where you've been, Mr. Chairman, all of the rest of you, you've done that financial management level. It's hard to kind of step yourselves up into that council role and that advisory body role, because it's a completely different animal. So that's why I just want you to know I'm gonna gently get you back into your lane, to make sure that we don't go off the beaten path.
And I'll just jump in there, to reiterate what the town manager just said. We went through this process at Northwest Fire District about a year and a half ago, where we used to have a document that had all of the policies and a lot of procedures along with those policies that supported the policies. And our fire chief at the time was one of the first things he did when he was appointed, said we're going to actually divorce those, not in terms of they're completely going away, but because they're still going to support each other, but the policy document needs to be the policy document. It needs to be the broad, overarching, the aspirational, the goals, the things that take us to where we want to go as a fire district, and now I'll speak for our town as the town. Those broad overarching policies that are not really going to change. And then the procedure document really needs to be a separate document. Yes, it supports the policies, but then that is really operational in terms of how we walk out accomplishing the policies. And so I'd say that just to say this is not an item or an issue that is benign to the town of Oro Valley. This is an issue that you see across local governments. They struggle with this issue. Okay, is this a policy or is this procedure? And in some cases, I made the decision when I was with Northwest Fire to keep some procedural level items in the policy, especially as it related to procurement, because those procedural items really dealt with how we were going to walk out RFP processes and how we're going to deal with the external, customers that we were dealing with through major procurements. We wanted them to have an expectation as they bid on our jobs and bid on our projects as to what this looked like, how they could contest things and whatever, and what that process looked like. But generally speaking, unless there was some sort of external, external group that we were communicating to, and in this case, everything that was really internal, that was procedural, we chose to completely strip out and remove from the policy document. So again, this is something that governments and other organizations struggle with. I know that it's a difficult item to address, but I think there's good reasoning and good purpose behind keeping policies and keeping procedures and not really trying to mix the two.
I want to take a first crack at something. I thought just looking at A, and because you have kind of a combination of things in A that you could probably separate. You have your balanced budgeting and planning. You have your long-range planning. The cash management and investment policy, I think that could be a separate policy unto itself, because that's where you're getting more into your the items that you kind of went through in your little presentation. I think asset inventory could be another thing that you could take out of the financial planning process, and it could be either part of your CIP area, or you could make it a separate policy unto itself, depending on how you like to have it.
Yeah, I agree with those comments, Commissioner Mason. So just so you're all aware, you know, if we wanted to do sort of a comparison with the fire district, again, their policies aren't perfect, but they are a little bit more structured. So the Northwest Fire policy that deals with A1 is represented in their policy number 14-11 and 14-16. So they have that, you know, A1 really split out into two separate policies. Obviously, we have long-range planning A2. They really don't have an equivalent there. I think it's kind of housed probably within 14-14.16. Cash management investment is its own separate policy with Northwest Fire at 14.07, and asset inventory is its own separate policy in 14.05. So again, you know, I think Commissioner Mason, spot on. I mean, I think that's, to me, cash management and asset inventory really don't, are there components, are there tie-ins? Sure, I mean, we could argue that there's tie-ins with all these policies, but they really don't, they're really not financial planning policies per se, in my opinion. So I think they just really don't fit within the structure of what we have. And I'll add to that just one thing that, you know, just for your consideration, the last paragraph in 8.1 where it talks about the town promoting understanding that its employees are its most valuable resource, to me, that's not a financial policy. I'm not sure why that, I mean, I understand that it's a good statement, but I'm not sure that that's a financial policy talking about productivity of staff, et cetera. You know, I'm having difficulty linking that with a financial policy. So I think that may belong someplace else, maybe in HR or something, but a personnel policy, but I'm not sure that's in the proper spot in our financial policies.
Where would you put debt rating?
Pardon me, Mr. Chairman?
Where would you put debt rating in terms of policy? Maintenance of a certain availability of funds, including the potential improvement in debt ratings.
I'm not sure that I have a good answer for you.
I'm sort of trying to add to a list that John started.
Yeah.
And of course, we've got pension policy, which I'm not certain relates to anything in here either. It's a separate topic altogether.
I would think that would be a separate policy, since we already have it kind of laid out. I was wondering if you wanted to, City of Tucson went through this same process several years ago, so I went and kind of looked at theirs too, and of course, theirs are quite large because they have a lot more complexity. But, you know, one of the things that they listed, and I think it was also mentioned in Northwest Fire procedures, and it was something, Dave, that when you first came on board, you talked about various types of, you know, legally balanced, operational balanced, structurally balanced, and you kind of discussed what those were. I thought if you wanted to add that A1, that might be something to do, because then you could kind of, you know, one is more for if you're having budget issues, you know, revenue issues and stuff, that you might take that approach versus one that you like to do on a reoccurring basis when times are good. So I thought if you wanted to add those definitions in, they're kind of broad, and it kind of gives you, you know, how the city might go in this direction or this direction, depending on, you know, what the environment is out there from an economics perspective.
Does Does annexation come into this anywhere?
Mr. Chair, members of the commission, I don't really think so. I think I don't know that that necessarily, again, it's one of those items. It's an important item. I certainly don't want to dismiss it or say that it's not important. It certainly is, but I view that as kind of a separate, I don't view that as necessarily a financial policy. I think that probably more properly belongs in economic and development and their policies than it does in the financial policies.
I was just going to say, Mr. Chairman, that the council did just adopt a brand new annexation policy at their last meeting, or the first meeting in July. That's very comprehensive. And that's really more about the future growth of the town. I think the financial policies are really about the financial day-to-day operations, and annexation is not a financial day-to-day operation. Mm-hmm. But I will tell you that the financial policy very clearly specifies that a fiscal analysis is required for every potential annexation. So that's part of the decision-making process, but it really isn't part of this day-to-day, how do we make sure that we manage our funds properly and, you know, that sort of thing. So so I do think that we're covered.
Should some kind of a link be there between this long-range planning section and annexation, as an example?
You know, Mr. Chairman, I don't think so. This long-range planning is really looking at, so annexations is really kind of a small subset, I'll say, of town resources and what we do, the services that we provide. Long-range planning, I think what we're looking at there is really a town-wide purview. What you see in A.2 is really really looking at the five-year financial forecast. That's a town-wide five-year forecast. So really looking at it from a town-wide perspective. Certainly annexations are going to feed into that, but it's just a small subset of what we're looking at for the entire town.
I think the financial plan, the financial planning policies is more of what is the overall policy for the budgeting process and, you know, revenue projections and expenses. It's more along those lines than what you might get into in annexations or growth or things like that. So we're looking at what is the policies that the town wants to follow from a budgeting and projection in that kind of sphere, I guess, is what I would think you'd want in this particular policy.
And I will add that in our financial forecast, we do not include annexations, even if they're, unless they have already been annexed, we do not make that assumption, because until that petition is signed and, you know, we meet that requirement, we do not make those projections. And so it's more of the annexations are more of a response at that point. Right. Okay, now that it's annexed, now how does that affect our financial future and in incorporating that?
Because what I guess looking at in A1, the third paragraph, the very last sentence where you say the contingency appropriation may only be expended upon council approval, I was wondering if you wanted to change that, because the contingency, setting up the contingency that you're going to have one, is already approved by mayor and council as part of the budget process. So I wonder if you wanted to say that if you had to use a contingency, you would notify mayor and council within a specific time, you know, 24 hours, end of the month, wherever you thought, just to give more flexibility, because it's somewhat difficult to know exactly at a certain point in time if you're going to dip into your contingency based on, you know, what the revenues are doing or what your expenditures are doing. So I was just kind of a question there if you wanted to to maybe change that a little bit to be more of a notification, since the use of the contingency has already been approved by mayor and council as part of the budget.
Yeah, I think Commissioner Mason, members of the commission, I would push back a little bit on that. I think it's standard to have mayor, a council, the governing body, the governing board, whatever is the, you know, to have them actually approve. When they approve the budget, they're approving the amount that's going into contingency, but they're not necessarily approving the utilization of that contingency. And I think it's wise practice. I've seen it. I think it's pretty standard across cities and towns that I've worked for or audited to have the governing body pre-approve, because that's really dipping into the piggy bank, so to speak. And we want their fingers on the bloody knife before we do so. We don't want to go down with the ship there and have them, oh, we didn't know any. I mean, yeah, I mean, we can inform them after the fact, certainly, but by that time the damage is already done. And I just think that this is I don't have any issue with leaving this in there. I'd rather have that pre-approval, honestly. It protects me, protects staff, protects town manager from any sort of scrutiny from our citizens or whatever, that we're utilizing our piggy bank in an inappropriate way or without proper authorization.
That's fine. Just a thought.
So, Dan,
I'm not talking about the contingency fund. It's just like in the budget we just did, there was a certain contingency approved for whatever the amount was, so it would be that contingency and not the other.
Right. Yeah, no, understand.
So, David, if we were to ask you to concentrate just on policy A.1, is there anything in there, in that particular policy? I mean, you can be rewritten, I understand that, and edits can come and go, but I don't think that's what you want the commission to be doing. But is there anything in there that we should take out or that might be in its own policy? You've now gone through one process here, annual process, and does this really reflect what you do?
You know,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, no, I think the one that kind of jumped out to me was just that last paragraph. I think the structure, I think it probably needs to, there's better organization of the information. I think all of these paragraphs serve a purpose. I think they're all really good policy statements. I think they're all very strong. But I just think the structure could be a little bit better, could be a little bit clearer. You know, the last one, I mentioned it before, promoting, you know, that its employees are its most valuable resource. Well, that's aspirational and that's great, but I don't see that as being a financial policy. You know, the other one is the paragraph that's, I guess, three paragraphs before that one, where it talks about the town shall work to minimize the financial burden of its taxpayers. Okay, that sounds good. By routinely evaluating both its administrative and direct service delivery. Technology shall be utilized when feasible. I understand where it's coming from. I think it's actually, I don't know. I could go both ways on that one. You know, whether it belongs in finance or whether it belongs in another department as part of their policies, because it really does specifically, and maybe I'm just reading it wrong or understanding it wrong, but it really deals with technology, which I am fully on more efficiency, better service, better utilize leveraging technology to achieve that. So I don't know. I can go either way on that, but. To me, definitely the last paragraph is the one that kind of jumps out as not really belonging in the financial policies. To me, that really belongs in more of an HR type policy. You know, the rest of these I think are really good. Again, really good policies. They could be augmented. They could be restructured or reformatted to provide a little more clarity, so that, you know, you're not reading paragraph after paragraph and say, okay, I know that's a policy somewhere, but where did I read that again, or where was that? I mean, was that in was that in A? Was it in A1? Was it in C3? Where did I, you know, I remember it somewhere. Where do I find it?
You want to the second paragraph on that page? Any fiscal year special revenue fund balances? That can probably be moved to your fund balance policy.
I agree, absolutely.
And then I was wondering on the next paragraph where you talk about the town's annual budget shall be adopted by the council at the fund level except for the general fund, which should be a department. Is there, I was just wondering if you wanted to do department level from all of the budget and not just the general fund?
Yeah.
I mean, usually up to the, can be done a lot of different ways, but I thought just for consistency, I don't know if you have any thoughts either way on that, but I thought, well, let's just do it all at the department level instead of the general fund at the department level and all the other ones based on the fund level.
Yeah, Commissioner Mason, members of the commission, what we're basically talking about there is the legal level of budgetary control. That's what we're talking about. And so when we adopt our budget, when we adopt things at the fund level, that really, you know, that really provides a lot of flexibility within that fund for us to maneuver. And, you know, if we're overexpending in one category, then we can, you know, but underexpending by a similar amount or more in another category, we can make those budget adjustments without taking them to council for approval. I understand where you're coming from, Commissioner Mason. I think to the degree that we actually drive that down a little bit, I'd be fine taking it down to a category level. I'm not sure I want to take it down to a department level. A lot of these funds don't have individual departments, truthfully. I mean, a lot of them are just one department.
They can really eat the budget.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, I understand. I just thought, you know, just because a lot of places will do it by activity, which, in other words, they're more broad, and you know, you have a lot of flexibility within either a category or an activity, or
right,
depending on your size and what you want to do. So just a thought there, if you wanted to be, since the general fund makes up the biggest chunk anyway, because you're going to have departments throughout other funds and maybe just one department, one fund. So but again, it's kind of just a thought there to see.
Yeah, the other challenge there that I'll add is you lose some of the consistency in terms of, well, we've done it this way in our budget for I don't know how many years, and now we're going to kind of change our budget to or modify it to, you know, in terms of how, especially as it replaces, you know, really where this impacts or is impactful is on our CAFR, because it's the budget to actual comparisons and whether we're in whether we've exceeded our budgetary authority in any particular category and if any particular fund, etc. That's really where it's impactful, and if we have, then we have to report on that in the notes to the financial statements. So I think my preference would be actually just to leave that as is, because then you lose a little bit of that consistency component from year to year. It becomes a little bit of an, you know, from one year's CAFR to the next year's CAFR, you're you know, if you try to compare them, you're comparing apples to oranges to a certain degree. But
so, David, let me kind of bring up one other thing. You know, on the other side of the coin about, you know, simplifying and clarifying what the policy requires, we should be careful not to put anything in there that we probably aren't prepared to do, either by way of cost or time or whatever. And so I noted that the current policy says that monthly budget to actual revenue and expenditure reports will be prepared for all town funds by the department and presented to the town council. Now, I don't know if that's happening. I've not been to a council meeting, and I've been to a few, where they've seen any more than just three funds. So, which is, if the council's accepting of that, then we should amend the policy. But if they want to see or would be willing to see all of them, we should probably, that's not a change to policy, that's a change to operations. That's really something we have to depend upon you to say to us, there's validity to doing that, and probably decide, you know, what we want to present to council for their consideration.
Wendy, do you want to weigh in on that?
I do. Thank you. Chair Beasley, Vice Chair Latchford, one of the attachments that we include with the monthly financials actually does show all of the funds. It shows basically the beginning balance for each of the funds at the start of the fiscal year, the year-to-date revenues and the year-to-date expenditures, and then an ending balance as of that particular month. So there is one attachment that does show all of the county funds.
Yeah. Now, does that compare to the budget?
It doesn't have the budget figures on it. It's got actuals on it.
Yeah. So according to our policy, we're supposed to compare it to the budget. So again, I'm not bringing up whether you should do it or shouldn't do it. I'm just saying from a policy standpoint, we don't want to write a policy that we're not going to be able to back 100%. And that's the only reason I'm bringing that up. And I want to kind of keep that mindset as we go through here. We don't have to build a lot of policies just to have a paper movement. We need a policy that's going to operate.
That's fair. Thank you.
I have a couple things here. First, as we start to slowly get in the weeds of changing in future meetings, of changing wordings and thinking about things we want to amend, I think it would be very helpful if on a temporary basis these paragraphs and line items were numbered 1.1.2.3, just so that we can go through this easily. I know we're remote and we're not here, so we can't point to where things are with gestures as easily, but I think in the future, if we again temporarily numbered these so that we could more easily get to the right spot as we think about where we want things to be, I think that would be very helpful. Second, I'd like to see us think about some communication policy of how we report numbers. In a continuance matter, so that when we decide that we want to change how we're what we think the key performance indicators are, what the metrics are that we're going to study and use to talk about performance or evaluation, that we be mindful that a lot of people, look at previous years' documents. So when we change what those key performance indicators are, we should, look back and say how it would have looked over the last year or 2 years, and also make sure that people still have access to the same, and key performance indicators or metrics or things they track, looking backward to forward. The third thing is something I'm not sure how much of a can of worms I'd want to open up on this, but, specifically when we talk about our 25% reserve fund for the general fund that is sarcastic, I was very surprised although we budgeted very conservatively and we were very fortunate that we did not have to tap into those, I don't see any specific policy benchmarks or standards about when in a emergency setting, what constitutes a reason to go into that 25% total reserve funds. And obviously we're not going to have to do that in this fiscal year. And this might be the one thing that 2020 didn't break. But I do think it would be pertinent to think about what the standards might be of how we do that and when a recommendation would be to go in there in order to support ongoing programming. Because if at some point we're going to budget conservatively enough that we never have to go in there and it's never going to be used even though it's sitting there, our legally required rate of return on that due to statute is so low that if we're never going to get there and never going to spend it, why have it if it's that low? There are better ways, there are better uses for that money in general. If there's absolutely no potential that we're ever going to get to that point.
Thank you, Commissioner Newell. I agree with those comments, especially, and that's where I wanted to start with the structure, because, and I get it. I think from my standpoint, I'd rather fix this once than fix it twice. So rather than use temporary numbers, I'd rather develop a numeric structure to these paragraphs and place them really in a more defined or a better place, hopefully a more clear place where they belong, and so that we can. And so that's something that that I will be working on. I wanted to get your feedback and comments before I did kind of undertook that work. But that's something that you can expect to see at the next meeting, is really me driving into the current structure and proposing some specific changes so that we can, again, we can walk through this process in a very organized and structured manner.
David, one of the things that I've seen in a lot of policy, more than just financial, other policies as well, is the designation of who has principal responsibility and who has secondary responsibility. You have that somewhat in the policies that you brought from the fire district. Is that something we could consider putting into the policies? I think it's helpful because we all experience turnover, and to make the manual, the policies, as effective as possible, regardless of turnover, they should be consistent. And everybody should know who's got the responsibility. And it could be other departments. May not be, I'm not suggesting. But that's something for you, your consideration.
Thank you, Vice Chairman Latchford. Absolutely, we'll take a look at that. I think just broadly speaking, the town manager is responsible, but then that authority gets delegated certainly to myself, and then also I delegate it to my staff. So that is certainly something that we can take a look at. Thank you. Excellent comment. I think we lost our board chair. So Vice Chairman Latchford, if you just want to take the lead here until Chairman Beasley rejoins us.
Did he fall off the bike again? All right. Is there any, I guess the question is there anything in any of these four policies under A that we need to consider eliminating? Is there anything in there that is not pertinent to each of those items? I mean, we can all edit and change, but I'm really looking to see whether there's irrelevant items in here or duplicative things. And the one I want to just bring up quickly is A4, the asset inventory. And asset inventory, I mean, the assets that you have in the town comprise the vast majority of the resources. So I'm wondering if that should be a separate policy and not fit in, particularly under the cash management and planning.
Yeah, Vice Chairman Latchford, members of the commission, I think it should be its own separate policy. I think the asset inventory and the cash management and investment policy, both those really deserve their own separate section. I know they are defined, separately under the financial planning policies, but I don't view them as financial planning policies. I view them as their own distinct policies that are worthy of their own separate consideration there. I don't think they should be lumped in with under planning. So
we could actually defer that for further discussion at another meeting.
Yeah, I think, again, my intent here was to gather your feedback, gather your comments, see whether there was anything that you were picking out, either in terms of additions or deletions, and then come back with a proposal, review that proposal to you at the next meeting, and then move on to the revenue policies.
I just thought of, from the viewpoint of an addition, on the second to the last paragraph on your first page about one-time revenues, I thought it might be nice if you had some kind of a definition of what a one-time revenue is, just so everybody is on the same page when you're talking about non-reoccurring or one-time revenues.
Certainly. Absolutely.
Would you want to just add in a general glossary of terms?
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, this is, again, something we talked about and discussed just really briefly, because we weren't discussing the financial policies at the last meeting, but we did talk about having a definition section to kind of lead off and make sure that we're all on the same page in terms of the terminology.
So David, can you just briefly recap for us some of the things that we have on the table? I don't want to go through the edits and everything, but what you see as some of the major items of change. We just mentioned moving the asset inventory to its own. Do you have a compilation there that you can repeat?
Yeah, I'm hoping that it's pretty comprehensive. I'm hoping someone else is taking notes, but basically what I've got here, redoing the numbering structure so that each paragraph is numbered so that we know there's something, again, just kind of some kind of structure there that we can tie these policy statements to and address and identify them with. Changing the monthly budget to actual and expenditure reports. It says it's provided, says it's provided for all town funds. Really, we're just providing them for a few funds. We provide all funds for the actual revenue and expenditure, but not the budget to actual. So either changing what we're providing the town council there or changing the policy. Doing a definition section or a glossary of terms so that we all have kind of a shared understanding of what some of these terms mean. I see a couple definitions that would be covered in that. We talked about procurement and risk management and internal controls and economic development policy. I think those are probably not really going to be likely captured under financial planning if we rework this. Will likely be captured as separate policies that would be added into the policy document as a whole. We talked about responsibility, who would have principal responsibility versus secondary responsibility for the policies. What else? I think that's...
You want to add in those types of budgets, you know, legally, operational, structure?
So, we talked about the legal level of budgetary control, whether it should be at the fund level or whether it should be at the department level or even a category level for funds. What was your comment there, Commissioner Mason?
If you wanted to add the types of budgets, legally balanced, operational,
structurally, right.
In as a kind of show what the town would do during.
Yeah, and I think that's where I was thinking, because I've got a couple notes there, you know, definition of one-time revenues and then structurally balanced budget definition. I really see that being included in our definition section. Where it's really clearly defined. And then we have the policy, obviously, that supports it.
Okay. So if we look at policy 8.1, Do the members have any other comments or questions regarding that one particular policy that they want to bring up? All right, David, is there anything in that particular policy that you think we need to add, or probably more of an add at this point? I'm going to stay away from how you're going to write it and what it's going to look like, because otherwise we'd be here all night.
Yeah. So. Vice Chair Latchford, members of the commission, I don't think so, but I'm going to certainly refer back to policies I developed at the fire district, and even I'll actually search some other, you know, town of Marana and some other surrounding jurisdictions policies. I actually think, again, I think these policies have really, there's going to be a lot of rework here, but it's basically the rework that we're doing. The way I envision this is not necessarily changing the intent, because I think the intent has been sound. I think these policies have really served. It may sound like I'm speaking out of both sides of my mouth. I'm not. It may sound like I'm really denigrating the policy. The policies have worked for the town. They've been very effective and very successful. I just think, I don't necessarily want to get away or move away from the intent of some of these policies, because I think they are very strong policies. I just think that maybe the structure, can be delineated a little bit better, a little bit clearer, and then also, if there are things that we can enhance to them, then I think we ought to certainly look at doing so. So nothing that really jumps out and comes to mind in terms of things that need to be removed, other than the one that I've highlighted, that last paragraph in 8.1, and nothing really that needs to be added, although I'm going to do a deeper dive into some surrounding jurisdictions and see if there's anything that they have that maybe we need to include or amend because they're not necessarily addressed in our current policies, but they are, you know, good policies nevertheless that we need to consider.
Of course, and you know, A.1 is probably there because budgeting, both balanced and planning, is such an important aspect of the entire organization. It takes up a lot of time, and of course it's statutorily required. So we really want to make sure that it's comprehensive enough that anybody coming into the town understands it and why we're doing it. So I think, you know, whether it should be short or long, it should be definitely understandable. A.2, which is long range planning, and let me just, again, point of education for me. So what's the difference between that and A.1?
So I think, Vice Chairman Latchford, members of the commission, I think really the key here is A.1 is really looking at the current year budget, the fiscal planning, and things that go along with that. A.2 really specifies that we're going to prepare a five-year forecast. So, you know, I think the key here is, you know, we do a 10-year CIP. That's certainly a long-range planning tool. Really, I don't think it necessarily belongs in A.2, but we have a 10-year CIP. We have a five-year operational forecast where we forecast our budget. So do we want to do, and I'm not recommending that we do, because it's a lot more work, and I think even beyond that five-year period, it just, year 6 through 10 almost become they become really challenging operationally, because no one predicted COVID, right? So I think even 1 year budget, even a 1 year budget is a challenge. To do 5 years is even more of a challenge, more work, because then you've got different estimates coming into play. But is 5 years appropriate, or should it be 3, or should it be 7, or should it be 10? I don't know. I don't have a good answer there. We're doing 5 right now. I think 5 has worked. My inclination is that we stay with 5. I'm not necessarily inclined to change that. I think this is a good policy. If we were going to change it, I'd probably look at reducing it to 3 or 4, but I don't know that that's even necessary. I mean, Wendy may want to weigh in on this, and she's, and, you know, and, you know, she's done this in the past, prepared these, and now, you know, Michael Dykeman is assisting in that. But, you know, I think, you know, I'm not inclined to necessarily change this policy. I think it's a good policy. I think it's just, that's really what the intent is, to say we're going to do a five-year operational forecast.
Yeah, and of course, you always have the opportunity to come forward at a later date and say, you know, I think I want to do a three, and then you can make a case. So
sure.
I think that that's the issue. Should long-range planning, the A.2, should that be incorporated into the balanced budgeting and fiscal planning, or does it deserve its own policy?
Yeah, and I think, Vice Chairman and members of the Commission, I think my sense is it really does belong. It does deserve its own separate policy. Okay. And again, I'm not necessarily inclined to increase. I think this is enough extra additional work. I think it has served the town well. It's protected the town. So, you know, I think it's a policy that's effective. I think it's worked well. It kind of gets us out of that one-year horizon, thinking more long-term, thinking more strategically. So, yeah, I'm not necessarily inclined to change this or to try to, you know, lump it in with something else. I think it deserves its own separate policy, and I think it's worked well.
Okay, all right. So that would be a separate policy, understood. Do any of my colleagues have any questions for David or others for this particular policy, the long-range planning policy?
Yes, I just saw some notes here I've taken. It's the fourth paragraph under A1, budget development strategic multi-year. Do you want to put that as part of your A2?
David, are you taking that one?
Yeah, I'm thinking. I'm sorry. it's a good question. I mean, I
talks about strategic multi-year fiscal.
Right. Yeah, I think it kind of hits on the same approach, the same point. Again, it's kind of that pivot between whether you're thinking just in the current, this upcoming budget year, or you're thinking more of the five-year horizon there. It does address multi-year fiscal planning. I don't know. I think, you know, the conservative revenue forecast, et cetera, I think all of that really does lend itself to being in A.1 or A.1. I think I would prefer at this point just to leave it as is. But, you know, that I understand where you're coming from. It's a good point, Commissioner Mason, in terms of the multi-year fiscal planning. Maybe that piece gets carved out and gets loaded into A.2. I don't know. I'll have to think about that one a little bit and chew on it.
Sure.
Thanks, Mike, for that. David, you'll work on the structural components of this. And all right. David, is there anything about A.2 that you want to bring to the table that should be either included, or I don't think it has anything to eliminate, but anything that's we're missing on long range planning, A.2?
Vice Chair, I don't think so. I think I'm pretty comfortable with this one, but I'll look at other surrounding jurisdictions, what they do and what they have. I mean, they may not do this, honestly, so we'll just see.
Okay. Yeah, plagiarism is always great in this project, so that's just fine. A.3, cash management and investment policy. Now, we've already talked a lot about investment policy and cash management, but probably more about investment policy. Should that be under the heading of financial planning, or should it have its separate... Well, I guess it would be under, or should it be separate from financial planning?
Yeah, I think, Vice Chairman, members of the Commission, I think this is its own separate, I mean, obviously it's its own separate policy here, but I think the heading of financial planning policies probably is going to go away, truthfully, and we're just going to have separate policies that really dictate how we deal with budget, how we deal with long-range planning, how we deal with cash management and investments, how we deal with asset inventory, and they will be their own separate, distinct policies and not be under some sort of heading or grouped together with other unrelated parts and pieces.
Right. Well, I think that's a good approach. People wanting to use the information don't want to get lost in the verbiage, and I think you're on the right track with that, David. So cash management and investment policy may become a separate, or will become a separate policy.
One thing I noticed about that in that first sentence, it says in accordance with the town's adopted investment policy. Is that, I guess that was a question we brought up. Is that somewhere else, or is that something we probably should?
Yeah, you're right, Mike.
Another policy somewhere else that this is referring to.
Yeah, I think we're, that information we need to find out, does it exist and do we have to bring it into discussion? So David, I'll depend upon you to look into that and see, but yes, you're right, Mike, we definitely have to have that. But in the investment policies and cash management, you know, the those typically be the, tend to be the most detailed in the financial policies I've seen and worked with, only because it's the most fungible asset that we've got. And so I think probably we need to, again, I love plagiarism. Don't feel bashful about it. If you have to borrow it from somebody to write it, I don't want you to reinvent the Bible here. But I do think that it needs to be pretty detailed so that people who come to the town and people who make decisions for the town know what the policies are. And the investment policy I'm a little unclear about right at the moment. So
I guess just one other point on that, the CAFR has a lot of information in the footnote about cash management and risk assessment and information like that. So there's a pretty detailed note in the financial statements that covers a lot of that as well.
Good point. Good point. Thank you for that. So there might, we all are sitting here thinking there might be another document somewhere running around. We just, we've got to find that out. So, all right. And then A.4, asset inventory, we kind of discussed that that probably needs to be its own separate policy, given the importance of assets to the town's financial makeup. And do any of the members of the commission have questions about that or comments or any thoughts on that particular?
Yes, one note I had on that, if you're going to have a policy there, a lot of people, a lot of municipalities have it where actual inventory is done, either on an annual basis, biannually, or whatever. You know, if you're going to have this as a policy, you should probably have that inventory that's taken as kind of a internal control.
Right. Yeah, Commissioner Mason, good point. You know, I think Commissioner Newell mentioned it earlier. This our asset inventory is the largest number on our balance sheet in terms of our assets. So, so we do have now. So, you know, a lot of that is infrastructure. I don't think anyone's going to run away with a street and try to move that. But with that being said, I think. To me, the keys here, I think this policy is a good policy. Maybe it needs to be structured and defined a little bit better, but and it certainly deserves its own separate treatment. But to me, the key here is depreciation method, the capitalization threshold of $5,000 or more, estimated useful life of 2 years or more. You know, where I was at the fire district, it was just 1 year or more. So 2 years is a little bit longer, so it kind of keeps our, you know, it keeps our fixed asset inventory, what we're capitalizing and depreciating, keeps that ledger a little bit leaner, so we're not capitalizing everything. You know, 5,000 I think is pretty standard for cities, towns, local governments that I've seen. Although the larger you go, the larger that number is. So, you know, City of Tucson, I mean, really, you're looking at a materiality there of what you ought to be capitalizing and tracking. So So yeah, there's those are kind of the key items related to this policy. And again, you know, that even what we're doing for stuff that's less than 5,000, we're not depreciating it, but we're still tracking it in some form. And then it gets captured as, gets capitalized as inventory, that type of thing. So so those are kind of the key drivers of this policy. I think they're really pretty standard. What you'll see in terms of most local governments, especially local governments our size or smaller.
Now the most of the asset, fixed asset or assets policies that I've seen often incorporate a table that indicates the type of asset, the length of life, you know, what the depreciation amount is. So we might want to consider incorporating that so that everybody knows that when they're buying a computer, they know that, well, I don't know if it gets capitalized, maybe it's a server, but anyway, you know, what are the depreciation lives that we have on our assets? And this one's always, Mike just touched on it a little bit, he glossed over it with the idea of doing a asset inventory, physical one. Now I know I've sat in front of many auditors who said, you know, did you do your asset inventory? And I've had to be honest with them and say, well, I started, but you know, to be honest with you, they're difficult to do because you're talking about thousands of assets. Is this something when we, it probably should stay in the policy, as I think.
You know, Vice Chairman, members of the commission, that Northwest Fire, that it's in their policy to do one every couple of years. I can tell you that that was very difficult, even for the fire district. A town of our size, it's not going to be any easier. I know the one time that we did do a physical inventory, we paid a consulting firm to come in and do it for us, because of the, we didn't have, you know, typically finance staff are tasked with doing those. I mean, typically, I mean, sometimes you can distribute that to other departments to, in terms of a workload, but typically finance staff are tasked with doing that. And I've never met a finance staff that has the capacity or the resources internally to be able to accomplish that in any sort of reasonable time frame. So so I think that's the challenging piece is if we do, I mean, I'm not arguing that it's not a bad idea from an accountability standpoint to get back to a baseline and saying, okay, these really are the town assets. The other challenging piece or component to this that we didn't have it at the fire district, but we do have it here, and it's not benign, again, to us, any city or town would have this, but the infrastructure piece, you know, how do you value roads and how do you value water lines and pump stations and different things, different infrastructure that the town owns, that it's invested in. It certainly depreciates that, but you're not necessarily going to put a fixed asset tag on it, and you're not necessarily going to go and say, yeah, you know, you're not going to, because I've done, when I was back in a prior life, when I was an auditor, I've done physical asset inventories, prepared those for clients and done those. And, you know, that it's a lot easier to do it when it's furniture and equipment and things of that nature than it is when it's actually something that you know is never going to move and you can't really tag. So that's kind of the challenging piece that the town has. But with that said, it doesn't mean that we shouldn't attempt periodically to do a physical inventory. Now, whether we do it internally or contract that out, that's something we would need to look at. But it does kind of provide that baseline that periodically we're getting back to something that we're solid. And I think that really provides a lot of, from an auditor's standpoint, provides a lot of confidence to them that when they're opining that we're just not coming up with funny numbers on our balance sheet for assets. I mean, that there's actually something solid there to support it.
Yeah. Does your financial system have a capital asset module to it?
Yes.
So that's kind of where you do it. And again, I would send it out to departments to help you out. I think the biggest thing, one issue you have is your
CIPs, make sure they get in on, everybody agrees on what the cost is, because sometimes departments will have different costs than what you show in the financial system. So that's, you know, that's always a thing that has to get worked out. But
yeah, Commissioner Mason, members of the commission, we actually have a couple. We have our internal financial package, Munis, but then we also have a package, I believe it's called Cartograph, that tracks assets for us. So
yeah, I'll throw in my reminder that when we're talking about tracking assets, that those expensive computer licenses that we get for things like, you know, this software that we're using now or other enterprise software are also things we need to keep keeping that asset inventory. Even though they're not physically assets, they are assets that should be inventory.
Yeah, I think Commissioner Newell, members of the commission, I mean, I don't want to get too much in the weeds here, but I mean, there's some pretty good, obviously with a lot of software programs migrating to the cloud, being cloud-based, software as a service, et cetera. You know, there's some pretty good GASB and GFOA guidance there in terms of what should be, what ought to be capitalized, or what is a lease and what ought not to be, or what is just a service type of thing. So typically if it's on-prem, obviously it meets the criteria, we're going to capitalize and depreciate it. A lot of the software as a service or off-base or cloud-based products and services, we generally would not, because we pay for those on a, you know, per user or license basis over time.
Yeah, so I think that the counsel that you're receiving is really that the way the current policy is written, it really encumbers upon the finance department to do an actual physical existence of, and also at the same time to confirm the accuracy of the asset database. I don't know if that's particularly doable given the resources you have.
So
I figured that much. I think what you have to do is, how can I write the policy so that it reflects what I can actually do, and is that sufficient to be able to cover the concerns that you're going to get from the audit firms to be able to give you their opinions, and also, of course, to give the comfortability to the governance and the executive team that there is controls, sufficient controls within the organization, not to have to incur a loss. So all that said, it's all very, I think you just have to look and say, what can I do? I've seen these particular policies whereby the organization is committed to doing 10% of the assets per year, whatever makes sense. I made that up. That's not plagiarizable. So, but you know, something that really confirms that you can do it, and it reflects that it's fulfilling what the policy is, because remember, the council is going to approve this. So once they approve it, they're going to want you to do it. And so I'm trying to get ahead of that curve a little bit and saying, let's only do what we can really do. And so I think that's the counsel you're receiving here from the three of us so far.
If I can just jump in there, because I had the thought and the idea, Vice Chairman Latchford, the approach that I would likely lean towards is just, again, kind of the auditor side of me coming out, the nerd side, but probably lean towards finding out which of those assets are really driving the most value, and okay, then confirming those.
Yeah.
And, you know, and trying to get a certain amount of coverage. Okay, it's 50% or 75%. I don't know what that number is. I'm kind of spitballing here, but trying to get a certain amount of coverage that we're confirming, in any given year, that amount of coverage of those assets actually existing, so that we have good, so that we know that, again, we've got good controls in place, certainly, but trying to minimize the idea that we could be overstating or understating our assets. So we're not materially, properly stating our assets in the financial statements.
And Dave, Vice Chair Latchford, if I may, I do believe our senior accountant, I believe we actually did do a physical inventory last fiscal year, last fall. I'm almost certain on that. I haven't been in this current position quite a year, but I am almost positive that we actually did a physical inventory ourselves last year.
So it is doable. Okay. So David's probably something you need to look into to see how that's going to be reflected in the policy. It'd be great if it is doable and it's being done. And
well, I know the $5,000 is kind of a standard capitalization rate cost. And with that, doesn't mean that you can't raise that if you do a little bit of analysis to see how much value, if you raised it to 10 or 20 or whatever, because 5,000 has been around for many, many, many years. So, you know, maybe it's time to take a look at that, to take some of the burden off, because, you know, you find out that when you raise it a little bit, you take off a lot of assets, but not that much value. So I just, but that's kind of a project into itself.
Yeah, just a kind of a funny aside, you know, when I started with the fire district 13 years ago, date myself now, but their capitalization threshold was $750. And I immediately increased it to 5,000. So we were not going to track a bunch of $750 assets at the fire district. We were a little bit beyond that. But
when I started with the city of Tucson, it was $250.
Oh, jeez. Wow.
And what raised the 5,000 did on that?
Of course, they were trading horses at the time. So. Just kidding you, Mike. Just kidding.
I know.
Where's the decorum here? Anything else on that particular policy that either the council, the commission members, or David, that you want to bring up here? Okay, so it looks like where we've wound up here is we've got two policies that are going to fall under financial planning. Then we have a separate policy for cash management and investments, and then a separate policy for capital assets.
Yes, sir.
Everything else flows in underneath those.
Yeah, and I'm not sure that financial planning even stays. I think we have a balanced budgeting and fiscal planning policy, and then we have a long-range planning policy and call it good.
Okay. All right. All right. David, does that conclude the first four?
I think so, sir.
Okay. You want to give, we'll hold that. For the next commission meeting, have you kind of determined which of the policies we'll be discussing then, or do you want to think about
it? Yeah, I think members of the commission, my plan is to discuss, do a recap. I'll bring back a proposal of A, so we can take a look at, you know, what the current is, have the new proposal, maybe have some discussion there and some of those changes, highlight those, and then get into to policy B and have that discussion. I think that's going to be enough for the next agenda in dealing with financial policies.
Okay. Are you feeling comfortable that we're keeping on the schedule that we agreed with the with our town manager and the council?
Absolutely, sir. Yes.
Okay. Okay, does that conclude that particular item on our agenda?
Well, yes, just one quick question. If we have comments or proposed changes, do you want us to, I know I can't send them to everybody, but would you like us to send them to you and we can discuss them, or would you rather do it? I mean, it's kind of hard to go through some changes right here if you have some wording or something you want to throw in.
Commissioner Mason, members of committee, absolutely. Yeah, if you have proposed changes, forward them my direction. Please don't forward them to everybody, but forward them to me. And I will take a stab. And, you know, there may be some give and take, obviously. I may come back with questions or a little bit of pushback. I don't know, but I am interested. I mean, this is why I'm involving you in the process. This is where you guys need to be. I'm definitely, you know, don't proclaim to be a know-it-all here. I think there are a lot of good ideas out there, a lot of different things and experiences that you guys have seen that I haven't, and want to rely upon your wisdom and guidance throughout this process. I think by the time we get to the end of it, it'll certainly be a good, strong process, both for the town, for the council, for you guys. And as I mentioned at the last meeting, this literally will outlive you and outlast you. This is very, very vital and critical to the well-functioning of the town from a financial standpoint. So looking forward to it.
Okay. All right. Then that concludes the item number four on our agenda. At this point, we move to any comments we might receive from our council liaison, Councilmember Nicholson, and I'm not sure he's here.
He's on.
He is? Okay. Excuse me, sir. So if you would like to bring forth anything before...
Yeah, I'm on. Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So we haven't had a meeting since our last session, but we are doing, let's see, September, I think it's 16th. We do our one-year fiscal analysis, 2019-2020. And, you know, the Rancho Viscoso thing, I think the negotiations are still going along with that. And obviously that'll have a financial impact on us. And, yeah, obviously we'll have quite a few more reports for you as time goes along. We're supposed to get updates from Mary and the staff about any changes of COVID and how our spending may or may not change. But, yeah, I guess you guys can't ask me any questions, but that's pretty much it right now.
Josh, just to be clear, you're receiving updates in September 16th. Is that what I heard?
Yeah, we should get a one-year financial. David may be able to tell me exactly what it is, but it's a one-year financial analysis, 2019-2020, or as best the estimate till the year end, I believe. Correct?
Yeah. Council Member Nicholson, members of commission, that's absolutely correct. These will be non-audited. We won't have our audit complete yet, but they will be our, you know, we ought to be pretty close in terms of where we ended up last fiscal year. And so we just want to present that to the town council and give them an update.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. That being the case, thank you very much, council member. Appreciate you being here. And hopefully you learned a lot about financial accounting tonight. So
there's a lot of stuff above my head. Yeah, thanks.
That's
Can I ask just one quick question?
Yes.
The permanent budget adjustment, did that pass?
Yes, it did.
It did, yes.
I haven't heard of it, though.
Passed handedly, I believe.
Yeah, 60-40, I think, something like that.
Oh, good.
Or 70-30, maybe 70. Yeah, somewhere between those two.
65-35.
There you go. Exactly, somewhere between those two.
Department coming through. Okay, very good. Let's move future agenda items. Do we have anything that we want to request? I'm thinking that the investment and discussion about the fund accounting took care of a couple of things. Is there anything that we still have open from the past that we haven't covered? I don't think so.
I can't think of anything, Vice Chairman, but that doesn't mean something doesn't exist.
All right. Well, I don't have anything in particular. David, Mike, do you have anything that you want to put on this section?
Sounds like we're going to be busy for a couple months, so.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it looks like we do have some work cut out for us. So, David, anything on your end?
Nope, I'm all good.
Okay. All right, very good. At this point, then, that concludes the agenda that we had for today. And if I can have a motion to adjourn.
Motion.
Thanks. Okay, a second.
So moved.
All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
Great. I want to thank everyone. And David, thanks very much for all your work putting into this. I'm sure that you would have gotten congratulations from the chair if we could find them. But in any case, thanks everyone for your time and attention. We are adjourned.
Thank you, commissioners. Stay safe.
Thank you.
Good evening.